dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. We are very pleased to be joined by an old friend who has been in the front lines of that war for many years. He is Ambassador Yoram Ettinger. He formerly had the portfolio for congressional affairs at Israel's embassy in Washington, D.C. He has been serving in various capacities in Israel for many years and has been, of course, active in reporting, even when he's not in government, on what is going on there. You can find his writings at theettingerreport.com. And Mr. Ambassador, it's always good to have you with us. There's much going on, and I'm anxious to take stock with you. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with Egypt. Of course, what is going on in Egypt at the moment is of great concern not only to the people most immediately involved there, the Egyptians, but also to those in the neighborhood like your own country. Tell us what you make of the latest turn of events and what you would advise America to be doing and saying about what's happening there at the moment.
Well, I certainly would advise anyone who deals with Egypt and the Middle East to rid oneself of erroneous underlying assumptions. In certain respects, we may be reliving right now the 1978 series of errors committed by the U.S. administration in Iran. For instance, we have today that assumption which considers the reality in the Middle East as a transition towards democracy, as Arab Spring in 1978. Then President Carter wanted to bring democracy to Iran, wanted to get rid of the dictator, the Shah of Iran, provide a tailwind to the old man in Paris, Khomeini, under the false assumption that Khomeini was simply vying for civil rights, for democracy. And the rest is history. One thing we should remember, tragically, democracy on one hand and Islam or Islamic regimes on the other hand are mutually exclusive. They constitute the oxymoron, the notion of freedom of religion, freedom of association, freedom of expression are all lethal threats to any Muslim regime in the Arab countries. We have this false assumption, which has been promoted by the U.S. administration, that the Muslim Brotherhood are merely a civilian organization. We remember General James Clapper, the hearing in February of 2011, when he insisted that Muslim Brotherhood is a civilian organization.
Largely secular.
Secular, right, that's it, secular. And the Muslim Brotherhood has been all along a transnational terror organization which also deals with civilian issue, terror organization which also has a diplomatic arm. And last but not least, we have this false assumption that the military regime is bad and anything else is better, but in fact, when it comes to Egypt today or Middle East as a whole, the weaker the military, the more effective are the Muslim terrorists. We have seen it in Libya. Gaddafi was very bad, but that which has followed Gaddafi is much worse. Mubarak was a dictator, a very bad dictator, but the Muslim Brotherhood does not bring about an improved situation. In fact, it's a growing threat to Jordan, to Saudi Arabia, to all pro-American Arab regimes. And last and not least, we should realize when it comes to the Middle East, we're talking about intensified unpredictability, and intensified unpredictability means there are much higher security requirements for the tenants in that neighborhood, and one of the tenants is Israel. At this time of higher unpredictability, higher violence, more intensified, treacherous, shifty attitude, this is not the time to pressure Israel to lower its security guards. In fact, this is the time to boost Israel's security requirements.
Indeed. Now, let me turn to that subject, because it does seem, Ambassador Yoram Edgar, that the United States is once again pressing Israel to take steps that would indeed reduce its security posture. We've seen as a lubricant for the so-called final status peace negotiations, the release of 20 or so prisoners and more to come, including prisoners who are very, very vicious jihadists with blood on their hands, Israeli among others. What is your take on what's going on in those negotiations, and what prospects, if any, do they have of actually producing something desirable?
Well, the renewal of negotiation should not be confused with peace, because we have at the table a regime, the Palestinian Authority, which has been engaged from day one in 1993 until today in the promotion of hate education. How can one talk about peace process when one of the so-called negotiators is a hate monger? And once again, peace process on one hand and hate education on the other hand constitutes an oxymoron. The other thing, from the U.S. point of view, is very, very worrisome, because to watch the U.S. administration preoccupying itself with a sideshow, namely the Palestinian issue, which is nothing but a sideshow in the Middle East, should raise some eyebrows. This is not the time to focus on the tumbleweeds on the road. This is the time to focus on the smothering sandstorms which are threatening very, very vital American interests. And at this time, when the Middle East is combusting and American interests are threatened, and the number of pro-American Arab allies is shrinking by the day, and the U.S. is in retreating from Iraq, from Afghanistan, cutting defense budget, you have only one effective firefighter in this Middle East fighter, and that firefighter is Israel, an unconditional ally of the U.S. This is not the time to clip the wings of the pro-American firefighter, and the current peace process aims to do just that, which does not bode well for American interests.
Yes, that's really the critical point here, is it's not just our friends in Israel who are being imperiled by this behavior, but it is in fact our own interests as well. Lastly, let me ask you about Syria. There is news on the wires today to the effect that the government of Syria has once again used chemical weapons and resulted in the death of many, many people. What do you make of that report, if anything, on the basis of what is known at the moment, Yoram Edgar, and more generally about what is going on in Syria and what our appropriate posture should be towards the civil war there?
There's no doubt in my mind that rogue regimes, whether it is Assad or whether it is the opposition to Assad, should be denied any access to non-conventional military systems, whether it's chemical, biological, certainly nuclear. In the recent past, Israel took some steps to hit non-conventional military systems in Syria. Once we realize that they are becoming mobile, it seems to me that the next step should be to decimate those non-conventional military systems before they're being used, before they're being launched either at one another or at Israel, maybe even at Turkey or at Jordan or at Lebanon. We should not wait for a smoking gun. We should do everything possible to deny that gun the access to the hand.
Indeed. Yoram Edinger, we have to let it go at that. Thank you very much, as always, for taking some time with us. Your perspective is greatly valued, and I hope that we'll have a chance to visit with you again very soon. Next up, Dan Gallington, an intelligence professional and longtime public servant in the Defense Department, will join us to talk about his take on this war for the free world and whether we're on the right side. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by an old comrade in arms, a man I've known for many years, worked with in the Pentagon back in the day, and have admired in years since his service to our country in any number of capacities. He served, among other things, as a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense and Special Assistant to the Secretary of Defense. He was a General Counsel in the United States Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. He has served with our arms control delegations. A man of many parts. His name is Daniel Gallington. He is currently a senior policy and program advisor at the George C. Marshall Institute. And you can also find his writings in a column that he does at usnewsandworldreport.com. Dan, it's very good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Oh, I'm just very happy to be aboard, Frank. It's always good to talk to you.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Let's start, if I could, with kind of the overview that you might bring, given your interesting and diverse backgrounds, Dan, to how we're doing in what I think of as the war for the free world. We can talk about specific pieces of it, subsequent moments, but just give us an overview. Are we winning? Are we losing? Is it at best a draw? How do you make it out?
One thing we always do is, we always try real hard, and everything we do with great spirit and intention, as you know, having been part of that for many years, Frank. But my problem with the situation in the Middle East is that we have demonstrated periodically and time after time that we don't choose the right side, or we're always aligned with the wrong side. The best we have been able to do, for example, is this lead from behind thing in Libya. But what that got us was four dead brave Americans in Benghazi, and it got us a burned consulate, and it got us hated by everyone.
Dan Gallington, there's much more and much worse to come. We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back with more with Dan Gallington on the war and what it means for you. Straight ahead. We're joined once again by Dan Gallington, a man I served with in the Pentagon a long time ago and who is currently a senior advisor to the George C. Marshall Institute. And we were talking, Dan, about the sort of state of the war. You've correctly pointed out we often find ourselves on the wrong side. Would you say that by aligning with the Muslim Brotherhood at the moment, as it seems to be the president's desire, we are on the wrong side as we speak?
Absolutely. I think that's the wrong side. And I think what happened in Egypt is clearly a situation where the Muslim Brotherhood was much better organized, and they prevailed in the first spate of elections over there. And the army realized that, oh my gosh, this is essentially a radical takeover, and we're not going to allow it to happen. Well, look at what the Saudis are doing, for example. The Saudis understand the Middle East much better than we do, and they are arming and throwing all sorts of money at the army over there because the Saudis are frightened to death about the Muslim Brotherhood. They don't want to see a situation where the Muslim Brotherhood increases its power and influence in that part of the world. And so this whole debate we're having about the United States aid, quite frankly, it's a drop in the bucket when the Saudis, quite frankly, are saying, listen, we'll match every dollar you take away from the Egyptian aid package.
Well, actually, multiples, it would appear. It would appear it's much, much larger than that. And Dan, let me just ask you, one of the things that we've been told might come of a cutoff of aid or other dissing of the Egyptian military that is going on at the moment could be a realignment by the Egyptian military with perhaps the Russians or the Chinese. The Saudis might be the least of their, their odious partners here. Do you see that as likely? And if so, what might the consequences be?
Well, you have to understand that when you're dealing with the Egyptian military, what that reflects is years and years of indirect influence that we've had over the military in our international military education programs. Most of these senior officers in the Egyptian army have been at one time in their career at an American staff college, an American war college, done a graduate degree in America, and they're quite familiar with the professionalism of our military. So I think that the Egyptian military really represents the best hope for a longer-term democracy. Although when you say democracy in the Middle East, Americans really need to understand that they're really unfamiliar with that concept, and it may take them years and years and years of fiddling with various formula. Look at Turkey, for example. which has been quite successful. Although they are oddly supporting the, as I understand, the Muslim Brotherhood, I don't really understand that, Frank, and I'm trying to figure out a reason why they're doing that. They're a NATO member, as you know, and you would think that they would be aligned with our interests or our wishes or hopes for the Egyptian people as they struggle to find the right kind of government.
Well, that would have been the case under previous Turkish governments, I think, but not under an Islamist like Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Unfortunately, Dan, it's gone the way that Egypt was headed until it was pulled back from the brink. And I think the military there in Egypt probably was looking at what happened to the Turkish military to decide that they did not want to go that way. Dan, let me switch gears quickly because you've got such an impressive background in intelligence matters to talk a little bit about a not unrelated subject, but one that has gotten a lot of attention lately for some pretty unhappy reasons, namely the collection of intelligence by the National Security Agency, exposed by Edward Snowden, a relatively low-level guy. We'll be talking a little bit with Rowan Scarborough about him and some of his similar turncoats. But Dan, what is your view of the balance that has been struck between collecting intelligence necessarily against an adversary determined to conceal its movements and intentions from us, on the one hand, and possible infringement of privacy among American, ordinary American citizens?
You know, with all the recent media focus on Edward Snowden and his revelations, I like to tell my friends, and you're certainly in that category, we need to take a historical view and a hysterical view, as the media has been trying to get us to react that way. Struggle with the correct balance for privacy and security goes back to Watergate and in the 1970s, when we formed the intelligence committees and when we passed FISA, and when we did all these things to try to find an appropriate balance. And after 9/11, of course, there was a struggle between President Bush and the Congress over the terrorist surveillance program, or the TSP. And the president basically said, I have these powers under Article 2 of the Constitution. And the Congress said, oh, no, you don't. We have to give those powers to you. So they ended up, Congress ended up amending FISA and essentially enabling President Bush's TSP program. And so what we have right now are reactions to originally a presidentially decreed program, but now enabled by the FISA law itself. And the suggestions are that it's gone too far. I was concerned, as you know, 5 years ago and suggested that maybe it was time to move the NSA out of the Department of Defense, where it historically has been, and directly under the management and control of the Director of National Intelligence, or DNI, so that Americans would have more.
Yeah, as a full-fledged intelligence agency and not as part of an organization that is supposed to be principally focused, at least, on fighting foes overseas. Dan Gallington, this is a subject for a longer conversation. I hope you'll come back to us again soon to complete that very important thought. Keep up the good work at the George C. Marshall Institute. I've got great regard for the organization, and we'll look forward to talking with you again very soon. Next up, Rowan Scarborough joins us to visit a bit about Bradley Manning, among other things, right after this.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Yeah.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6, after Michael Medved at 3, on 1260 WRC, New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. After nearly 4 years of delays and other shenanigans, the prosecution has rested in the trial of Army Major Nidal Hassan for the massacre at Fort Hood in 2009, officially trivialized as nothing more than workplace violence. In fact, of course, Hassan's murderous rampage was an act of jihad, or holy war. Since he has already stated that the evidence will show he's the shooter, there would seem to be little point to further proceedings except for one purpose. Hassan is anxious to be recognized as a soldier of Allah and that his punishment will therefore make him a martyr for Islam. This trial has been a travesty from the get-go. It must not now be allowed to become a platform for a jihadist to continue his war against this country. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Rowan Scarborough. He is one of the preeminent national security journalists of our times. He writes for the Washington Times. He's the author of several very important books, including Rumsfeld's War, The Untold Story of America's Anti-Terrorist Commander, and Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. That's a pretty interesting segue point, Rowan. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us, as always.
Good to talk with you, Frank.
I want to get your read on enemies, it would appear, inside the Obama administration who have seen fit to provide classified information to the New York Times reporter David Sanger, who is seemingly writing glowingly about Tom Donilon, the now former national security advisor to the president, in connection with the Stuxnet virus that was used against Iran's nuclear weapons program. Tell us what's going on here. Is this just another leak, or is this something in a class by itself, perhaps?
Well, this is not just another leak, because if you read his stories that disclose the war plans for Stuxnet, it came right out of the Situation Room at the White House. And he quotes participants in the various war cabinet meetings. I mean, the other, you know, Manning is a private, Snowden is a low-level contract employee. This leak came right out of the heart of the White House. And the Justice Department began an investigation a year ago, and NBC News reported a month ago that the target of the probe, one of the targets, is none other than a retired four-star general, at one time the number two officer at the Pentagon. And the point of my story, Frank, was that Freedom Watch was able to get a Freedom of Information request from the State Department, approved all the email interaction between Sanger and in the administration. A lot of it was released, and I poured through it and did a story. And what it shows is, the bottom line, Frank, is it shows that Sanger had wide, wide access to the top levels of government, both at the White House and at the State Department and at the Pentagon. In fact, in one email, Sanger boasts that he's had daily contact or constant contact with Thomas Donilon, who was then the national security advisor to the president. So the point of the story is, if you're looking for, you know, if the Justice Department is looking for where this leak came from, it would not be a bad place to start, you know, right in the Situation Room and right at the White House.
Right at the top. Let me ask you, Rowan Scarborough, because one of the things that we are, you know, often encouraged to believe is that well, that this leak is, a regrettable or maybe even condemnable, but not all that consequential. In your professional judgment, as a very close observer for many years of the national security establishment, what does it mean if the United States government is effectively taking credit for having waged cyber war against a government like that of Iran, quite apart from perhaps sharing information about how we've gone about doing that, which is being compromised, of course. But what might it mean in terms of a casus belli, as they say, grounds for a retaliation against us, that this kind of information is being now boasted about?
That's right. And I it's my opinion, Frank, based on some statements that have been made since the New York Times stories came out, that it basically shut down the campaign, that it had so much information in there about how we were introducing Stuxnet into the system and what variations we were using and the timing, that it would be and how we concealed it so the Iranians would not know it was actually inside their complex centrifuges. That disclosing all of that basically shut down the program. That's my opinion. Based on what members of the Defiance Board have said, they've said that that report was devastating to the use of that computer worm. Now, when I see the word devastating, that tells me that the program is over, and we're going to have to look at other means to try to slow it down, short of, you know, Israel bombing it at some point.
Yeah. So apart from Tom Donilon and this general Haas Cartwright, I believe it was, who were implicated in these leaks, just on this other question, Rowan, do you see evidence that the Iranians are now engaging in cyber attacks against us, perhaps in part justified on the grounds that they are indeed retaliating for what we and the Israelis did to them?
Well, they are. The Iranians are are probing our systems all the time, just like the Chinese are probing our systems. In today's of espionage, this goes without saying, you don't need a spy inside a room at the CIA any longer, because it's all out there in the Ethernet if you can come up with a plan to penetrate it and then capture it. And so the Iranians are involved in that, as are the Chinese and other enemies of the state, as is al-Qaeda.
Rowan, one thing I would just mention to you is you probably are aware, former Senator Byron Dorgan was on the program yesterday, and we were talking about a new book that he has written called Gridlock, which is basically a somewhat fictionalized account, of course, about an attack by Iran in conjunction with Venezuela against our the computer systems and so on that control our electric grid, with devastating effects on it. And as he pointed out in our conversation, this is not too remote a possibility given the vulnerability of the grid. So we should hardly be, for any of these reasons, compromising very sensitive information as we are. But it may really reap the whirlwind for Americans as a result. Rowan, let me switch gears on you, if I may. We've had the report of the Bradley Manning penalties having been assigned today. Tell us a little bit about the Manning contribution to undermining our national security, and whether you think the 35-year sentence that was handed down to him, with the possibility of a parole after 10 years, being an adequate punishment under the circumstances.
Well, that's an awful stiff punishment, Frank, for somebody leaking information. I cannot recall a punishment that stiff. It sends a signal out there to people inside the bureaucracy. Don't download a document and give it to reporters, or you're going to be in big trouble. I thought the biggest disclosure that came out of the week-long sentencing hearing was how many warning flags Manning himself put up that revoked my security clearance and kicked me out of the Army because I'm unstable. He had repeated tips where he would turn over tables. He would lay down in a ball and scream. He punched a woman soldier one time. He cussed people out. And yet, Army kept him as an intelligence analyst with access to almost top secret, almost to the top level of how far you can peer inside our secrets, whether they're CIA, NSA, or whatever. Just flabbergasted that officers and master sergeants who were above him did not see this before he was able to inflict all this damage on the national security state. And I think that in itself has changed all the rules for security clearances in the military. They've drafted all new procedures now on reporting erratic behavior by people who can sit down and flip through top secret documents just to make sure there's not another Bradley Manning out there.
Well, one would certainly hope so, but this sounds to me, Rowan Scarborough, as though it's very much a case of closing the barn door after the horse is gone. It reminds us, of course, of some of the evidence that's been presented and will be, I suspect, in the remaining days of the Nidal Hassan trial, the behavior that was overlooked, the very clear warning signs, as you say, the red flags that he was throwing up that were simply dismissed, and people, in fact, people who brought them to the attention of their superior officers were warned that their careers would be on the line if they persisted in raising an alarm about this jihadist in their midst. So I pray, as you say, Rowan Scarborough of the Washington Times, that these sorts of steps are now being remedied. These mistakes are being remedied in the guidance on security clearances. I know you'll be following this story closely. We'll be talking more shortly with Diana West about the Nidal Hassan affair. But thank you for taking a few minutes with us, and keep up the good work at the Times. Rowan, come back to us again soon. And as I say, next up, we'll be talking with Diana about the Nidal Hassan affair and more right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them.
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week at about this time, by our friend Diana West. She is a syndicated columnist and a woman who has delivered recently a most extraordinary new book. It is entitled American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. She's also the author of The Death of the Grown-Up. And as I say, we have a chance to visit with her, making it one of the high points of each of our weeks. Diana West, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. I'm glad to be back.
One of the things that you have really chronicled in your both weekly comments and DianaWest.net, your blog, and of course in your books, is the failure to understand the nature of the enemy that we are confronting in what I think of as the war for the free world. And I'd like to sort of kick around with you a couple of sort of manifestations of this problem that are with us at the moment. Maybe we could start with the fact that Al Jazeera America is now launching in many cities in the United States and indeed in homes across the country now through the courtesy of various cable outlets that are distributing it to homes, whether people want it or not. Talk to us a little bit about who Al Jazeera is and what they might well do with this kind of access to America.
Well, Al Jazeera America is an arm of the Qatari government. There is no press freedom in Qatar, and although they may be making concessions in various ways to this particular branch of their franchise, we have to be very wary of and very, very cognizant of what it means. I mean, it is a state propaganda entity, and it's not like looking at what we've traditionally regarded, for example, as the BBC, which is another state programming entity. Al Jazeera, coming out of Qatar, is in earlier days when people were a bit more bumptious and fractious and a little more honest, would be called Muslim Brotherhood TV. And now we have an entity of this in America. And again, I can only say this is a Trojan horse, or perhaps Trojan camel, it's for a better metaphor, in terms of bringing in influence. Ideological influence, Muslim Brotherhood, it may be very soft, it may be very pleasing. I follow some of the people involved on Twitter and so on, and they seem extremely much like kind of dupish people. They do not seem to be broadcasting major ideological treatises or anything like that. They actually seem like, frankly, so far, my assessment would be fairly empty vessels. And that may be exactly what Al Jazeera is, America is trying to dress up their propaganda with. But this is an alarming development, because it is not being presented with any kind of an honest appraisal or even consciousness. And there have been just a slew of puff pieces about this fantastic development in the media. And it's bizarre when it goes back to a country that does not have press freedom. Along with everything else.
Yeah, not only no press freedom, but as you say, is been putting its immense resources, much of it, of course, you know, provided indirectly by us in the form of petrodollar transfers, to Al-Qaeda, as well as the Muslim Brotherhood. And we should be clear, as I know you are, Diana West, but the rest of us should be clear, that however soft the version is here, what is being purveyed by the parent company, by the state of Qatar, is enemy propaganda, including a weekly program by the preeminent Islamist cleric in the world, the Al-Qaradawi. This is really dangerous stuff. I keep thinking back, Diana, to the Cold War, and you've of course dissected it brilliantly in your new book, American Betrayal. But had the KGB been able overtly to operate a propaganda outlet reaching tens, if not hundreds, of millions of Americans every day, it's a little unlikely. It seems to me it would have come out as well as it did.
Well, that's an interesting point, because one of the pieces that I look at is actually the placement of just scads of agents at the Office of War Information, which, of course, was the bureaucracy that the Roosevelt administration set up to censor war information, to process war information for the United States. There were so many of these people we can now identify as actual agents of the Soviet Union and communist ideology, that I actually asked the question, was this pro-Soviet propaganda coming into the United States, or was it Soviet propaganda? So again, you're looking at another kind of Trojan horse situation, you know, in different guises. I mean, times change, different opportunities arise. I mean, look, you know, in Washington, D.C., as I understand it, at Children's Hospital, one of the new developments there is something that's a gift of the Qatar government. So these are the ways influence is bought, edges are rubbed off. It is highly dangerous because money is corrupting, and the amounts of money I understand they're being thrown around Al Jazeera America are probably making most ink-stained wretches you know, look twice before they have any sort of principal turndown. I mean, this is the sort of danger that I think petrodollars and Islamic influence present us in our time, that Russian and communist infiltration was more a matter of true believers moving and not nearly as well healed in terms of buying influence.
And my point was really simply to say that the efficiency with which information can be communicated today, which is being exploited massively by Al Jazeera in its various forms, among others, of course, the Al Qaeda, not least, makes I think what was done in the old days, though it was quite formidable, as you say, pale by comparison. Diane, let me switch to another topic that also bears sort of attention in this same vein, and that is our failure to understand what we are up against in the person of a jihadist like Army Major Nidal Hassan. The prosecution has now rested its case. We're, of course, going to be waiting with great interest what kind of defense, if any, Nidal Hassan mounts, having admitted that he was the shooter. But he's being tried on the basis, as you've pointed out many times, of being guilty of nothing more than workplace violence. What's going on here? Why this disconnect and the failure to acknowledge this is what it is, jihad?
Well, this shows how advanced. I mean, this is a tremendously saddening and dispiriting development when in a court of a military court, American court, there is a concerted effort to deny what everyone who's watched this case, and certainly those who are affected most closely by it, the survivors of those who were actually killed, know that this was an act of jihad. It's ridiculous that we have this conversation, but we are looking at the imposition of narrative, which again is another major theme of American betrayal. How narrative is imposed on us, how history is erased, how our consciousness of events is taken from us. And I would say that this particular case is that important and that significant. It's almost, Nidal Hassan is you know, extraneous to this operation. This is a concerted effort by government authorities, military authorities, to deny jihad, to institutionalize the denial of jihad, and it's working. And Al Jazeera will probably report it just perfectly, and that will trickle out into the rest of the media. And at a certain point, people shrug, look the other way, and think, "Oh, I guess so." And that's how it happens, and that's how reality is taken from us, and we all enter into a new era of unreality, and it becomes harder and harder to come back to Earth.
Well, and more to the point, it becomes harder and harder to understand the nature of the enemy we're up against and to have any chance of being able to triumph over them. Diana West, we have to let you go with that. I appreciate, as always, your taking the time with us. Thank you for the marvelous new contribution you've made with American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Check it out, folks, if you haven't done so already. It is really required reading to understand the challenges that we're facing in this present version, as well as the previous one, of the war for the free world. We'll talk with you again next week, Diana West, and we hope we will talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.